Israel has survived yet another major setback in which 24,000 people perished. We finished with that this morning in chapter 25. This was the result of their tragic error in the matter of Peor, where they committed fornication with the women of Midian and willingly also participated in the evil sacrifices. That event goes to show how the devil's schemes always lead to false worship. Now the nation has been wandering for 38 plus years and is close to entering the promised land. Before they go in, there are a few matters which must be cleared up. First, God instructs them to take another census. The last two were taken 38 years earlier before God punished them with their desert wanderings and cursing that generation so that they would not enter the promised land. They were to die in the wilderness. Now that prophecy needs to be documented. So God orders another census. And you can be sure that their ages are checked to make sure that no one was still living who was 20 years old or older in that first sentence when the curse was pronounced upon them. So we come to chapter 26, and we're going to do the census, and it is marking the soldiers. That's what he's doing. The census is about the soldiers. He's not counting the rest of the people, just the soldiers. They're the ones that has to be numbered because they're the ones that are going in the army to defeat the coming nation. So there's the setting for this. In verse 1 of chapter 26, it came to pass after the plague that the Lord spoke unto Moses and unto Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, saying. The leaders here that God is speaking to are Moses and now Eleazar, no longer Moses and Aaron, because Aaron is dead. Aaron has died. He is gone. Now his son has taken his place. And so we find them beginning to deal with this, and he stands in his place. There's divine command here in verse 2. Take the sum of all the congregation of the children of Israel from 20 years old and upward throughout their father's house, all who are able to go to war in Israel. The exact same wording that they used in chapter 1 and chapter 2 when they took the census, those that are able to go to war. It's a fascinating thing that he doesn't give the age, the upper age limit to those that are going to war. The younger ones, no one under 20. He doesn't say the older ones have to be anyone below 67, which has a very special meaning for me because tomorrow is my birthday, number 67. Maybe he said 66, so I wouldn't have to be amongst the army members that go to war. I don't know. He doesn't give that upper limit. It simply says those that are able to go to war. How many of you think your pastor still young enough and vibrant enough, he could go to war if he needed to? Oh, man. Pastor Bob, I'm in trouble. You're really in trouble. It's you and me. All right, we're together. All right, that's good. All right, so take the sum. And then Moses says in verse 3, and Moses and Eleazar, the priest, spoke with them in the plains of Moab by the Jordan near Jericho. Now notice, I mean, it's easy to slip right over that verse, but I want you to look at it carefully. Verse 3, Moses and Eleazar the priest spoke with them in the plains of Moab by the Jordan near Jericho. Just so you get a picture of where that is, here's your map. All right, some of you know the map of Israel. There's the Sea of Galilee up in the top, the Dead Sea in the bottom. And that dot where you got the big yellow dot is where this nation is lodging there right now. It's the camp of Israel. And you can see in the picture on the left, if they were to cross the Jordan River, there is Jericho across the river. That's where the plains of Moab are. It is modern day Jordan. Debbie and I in 2015, we're able to stay in Amman, Jordan, which is just a little bit north of there. We came back and came through that very section. It's the section where probably Ruth came from. Ruth the Moabitess. She was from the land of Moab. And so this is the place where they were camped at that time. And so all that we're going to look at tonight, as well as the next three sermons in Deuteronomy, all come while they're camped here in about a few days in the plains of Moab. So that's the setting, that's the location, and they're ready to go. They are looking over, from the plains of Moab, by the way, you can look across the valley and you can actually see Israel from there. And so these people are chomping at the bit. They are ready to go. They're ready to go into the land. So that's the setting. Now we look at the sons. Verse 5 through 51, give us all of the sons of Reuben. In verse 5, the sons of Simeon, verse 12, the sons of Gad, verse 15, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, all 12 of them are listed. Now there's a couple of special notes I want to draw your attention to before we go any further. Notice in verse 9. In verse 9 it says, and the sons of Eliab, Nemuel, and Dathan, and Abiram, this is that Dathan and Abiram who were chosen from the congregation who strove against Moses and against Aaron in the company of Korah when they strove against the Lord. And the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up together with Korah when that company died, when the fire devoured 250 men and they became a sign. But, verse 11 tells us, notwithstanding, the children of Korah died not. Isn't that amazing? God took Korah out because of his rebellion, but not his children. The children were under 20 years of age. They survived, and God gave them a second chance. They got to go in with the rest of the nation. In verse 33, there's another special note I want to take your attention to. In verse 33, it says, and Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, had no sons, but daughters. And the names of the daughters of Zelophehad were Mahla and Noah, Hogla and Milcah and Tirzah. These are the families of Manasseh, and those who were numbered of them, 52,700. So these somehow, he didn't have any sons, but he had daughters. That's going to come up a little later in our text, so keep that in mind. So then we come to the sum in verse 52. The Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, unto the land shall be divided by an inheritance according to the number of names. And the concluding statement is what I especially want to draw your attention to, starting with verse 62. And those who were numbered of them were 23,000, all males from a month old and upward, for they were not numbered among the children of Israel because they had no inheritance given them among the children. That's referring to the tribe of Levi. All the other tribes were given. Now Levi is also given their number. Verse 63, these are they who were numbered by Moses and Eleazar, the priest, who numbered the children of Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan near Jericho. Getting those words there? They are all thinking about what's going to happen next. They're going to cross the Jordan. They're going to hit Jericho first. That's the first city they're going to come to. Verse 64 is the most important verse in this chapter. Don't miss it. Verse 64 says, but among these, there was not a man of them whom Moses and Aaron the priest numbered when they numbered the children of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai. Not one of them was accounted in the first census in chapter 1 and chapter 2. These are all children that were born in the wilderness during that 40 years. All of them were 20 years or younger or were born in the wilderness. They're the only ones now that make it. Why? Verse 65 tells us as it concludes, for the Lord had said of them, they shall surely die in the wilderness, and there was not left a man of them save Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. Everyone else died in the wilderness. The psalm that Morgan read this morning was Psalm 90. It was written by Moses in the wilderness. For 40 long years, those people wandered around in the desert. And Moses wrote that beautiful psalm during that time. Our lives are passing. They're cursed. We're going to die in the wilderness. But he said at the end of that, so teach us to number our days. God had numbered their days. And we need to see ourselves in the same way, wandering around in this desert wilderness of planet Earth. Number your days. Don't fall in love with this place called Earth. Because this is not our home. This world is not my home. I'm just passing through. We might be stuck around here for 38 to 40 years more. But get your eyes on heaven. I think I've got a chart here to show this. You've got it in your notes too. If you didn't pick your notes up, you can go back and get them there. They're here. So you can see that Israeli census, and there's a comparison of chapter 1 with chapter 26. Now, notice there's about 1,820 individuals less in the second census than there were in the first. But don't forget, just a few days before, maybe a couple weeks, we don't know for sure, they had that terrible thing in which 24,000 men were killed because of their practice. So if they hadn't misbehaved, they would have had more. As when they were ready to go into the promised land, then before God cursed them and said they're all going to die 20 years and older. So it's an amazing thing how God blessed them and protected them and watched over them. So here they are, poised and ready to go. They're chomping at the bit, but God says, wait a minute, got a few more things we need to take care of. So here's some matters of significance in chapters 27, 28, 29, and 30. What are the matters of significance that we want to talk about? The first is about the land. Chapter 27, there's some matters of inheritance. There's a difficult inheritance issue in 27, and it was about the daughters of Zelophehad that we talked about. They don't get any inheritance. And so it's a very special case. It's a difficult case. Moses, I don't know what to do. So he asks the Lord, and the Lord says, yep, give them some inheritance. They don't have any sons, so give the daughters. But if they marry into another tribe, that inheritance is to stay with that tribe in their family. So he gives some instructions about that. The second, he talks about leadership transition. In verse 12, I want you to see this. And the Lord said unto Moses, get thee up into this Mount Abiram, and see the land which I have given unto the children of Israel. And when thou hast seen it, thou shalt also be gathered unto thy people as Aaron thy brother was gathered. Why, Lord? Here's why in verse 14. Because you rebelled against my commandment in the desert of Zin, in the strife of the congregation, to sanctify me at the water before their eyes, that is the water of Meribah in the Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin. So we remember that scene where the people were complaining and whining. Moses got upset and he got so angry. And God said, speak to the rock this time. Don't strike it. And Moses didn't speak to it. He struck the rock twice. God still gave him water. That's mercy. That's grace. But he held Moses responsible for that moment. And for that moment, Moses was not allowed to go into the promised land. So, Moses reminds the people of this very event. He doesn't hide the reality that he had sinned. We'll see that next week when we come to Deuteronomy chapter 1. He says, God said you're not going in. He's disciplined me. And so I'm not allowed to go in. You are going in, but I can't. And then this very event is also mentioned later on in Deuteronomy 32:51, where God reminds him once again, here's the reason you're not going in. So Moses is concerned for a replacement. In verse 15, the Moses spoke unto the Lord, saying, let the Lord, the God of spirits of all flesh, set a man over the congregation who may go out before them, who may go in before them, and who may lead them out, and who may bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord be not as sheep that have no shepherd. He's saying, I know I can't go in, but please assign somebody else to be the leader, the shepherd for this nation. He's concerned and asks God to find a leader to succeed him, and God selects Joshua, and then he instructs Moses to have a special ceremony, and you dub him as the new leader, and I will put my spirit upon him and make this a public ceremony, and then you give him a charge and tell him what his responsibilities are as the leader of this nation. So there is it's really precious, and we'll see it a little more next week. Let's go on to the matters of significance about leadership, then about laws. There's a bunch of laws, and there's two different categories. The first in chapter 28 is about the feasts and offerings. He gives them specific instructions about the feasts and the offerings again. And these seem to be additional offerings. There's the daily offerings, verses 1 through 6, 8. There are weekly offerings, verses 9 and 10. That's referring to the Sabbath in particular. There are monthly offerings, verses 11 through 15. And then there are yearly offerings. And he defines them specifically as he goes through that text, the Passover, the unleavened bread, the first fruits, the trumpets, the Day of Atonement, tabernacles. Then he gives a summary of them also in verses 39 and 40. So just keep in mind, God is giving them instruction about their worship plan. There is a daily offering, there is weekly offerings, there are monthly offerings, and then there are yearly feasts, offerings that are special times of celebration and worship. Then in chapter 30, he has a whole section that deals with the law of vows or contracts. Fascinating here in that God is giving them some instructions. There are eight specific cases that are made in which God gives instructions by when vows are made by a man or by his wife or by his daughters. The husband or father has the right, is given the authority to avoid those vows. If one of his, if his wife makes a vow or if one of his daughters makes a vow, the husband or the father has the authority to void that vow. But if he says nothing at the beginning, then the vow becomes a legal binding contract for which he is also responsible. God holds the husband and the man to be the head of this home. Now come to chapter 31, where we look quickly at the Midianite sentence. A Midianite sentence. God is going to deal with them. It's reckoning time. It's payback time. This is a time of vengeance, of judgment. We just looked at that chapter earlier today, this morning, on chapter 25, where the Midianites, through the counsel of Balaam, were just trying to curse Israel, and they did curse them through the lust of the flesh. Now it's payback time, and God will employ Israel in this moment of retribution. He instructs Moses in verse 1 and 2. Look at verse 30, chapter 31, verse 1. It says, "And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, Avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites. Afterward thou shalt be gathered unto thy people." Avenge them of the Midianites. He doesn't tell us specifically all it means, but it seems to imply that this avenging of the children of Israel, the Midianites, is implied here to be a full genocide. Wow, we say. Genocide. This is the full weight of the curse brought down upon themselves by their evil attempt to curse and destroy Israel. Their goal was genocide, to destroy and eliminate God's people, and God brought that curse back upon their heads and said, you will receive the full vengeance of that curse. God would return that curse directly upon their head. So the command is given, verses 1 and 2, and they comply in verses 3 through 12. Moses says, arm yourselves. They get the army together. They don't take the full army out. Apparently, Midianites weren't that huge of a group at that time. And so they come out and they take them and they do some pretty heavy damage and execute them. Then we have the full report in verses 8 through 12. Verse 8, they slew the kings of Midian, besides the rest of them that were slain, namely Evi and Rechem and Zur and Hur and Reba, five kings of Midian. Notice this next word, this next name, Balaam also, the son of Beor, they slew with the sword. That's the guy we were looking at this morning. That's the guy that that had the donkey talking to him, and God was speaking to him, and God was showing him, and Balaam, instead of recognizing himself, tried to curse them also. He couldn't do it with his curses that he normally did, but he did it with the counsel of immorality. And God held him responsible for that as well. So this evil prophet who tricked them into a wicked trap of immorality ended up paying for it with his life as well. Israel, verse 9, the children of Israel took all the women of Midian captives and their little ones and took the spoil of their cattle and all their flocks and all their goods. And they burned all their cities wherein they dwelt and all their campments with fire. Verse 11, they took all the spoil and the prey of men and beasts, and they brought the captives and the prey, the spoil, unto Moses and Eleazar the priest, and unto the congregation of the children of Israel, unto the camp of the plains of Moab, which are by the Jordan near Jericho. You notice that phrase keeps coming up? Where they are. They're all focused and thinking about going into the promised land. But there's a correction that needs to take place here. Moses is angry at them in verse 13. And Moses and Eleazar the priest and all the princes of the congregation went forth to meet them. And verse 14, and Moses was angry with the officers of the host, with the captains over thousands, the captains over hundreds, which came from the battle. And Moses said to them, have you saved all the women alive? You wouldn't think, I mean, you know, we're killing soldiers. We're killing men, not the women. But you've saved these women? Notice what he says in verse 16. Behold, these caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to commit trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor. And there was a plague among the congregation of the Lord. Now therefore kill every male among the little ones and kill every woman that hath known man by lying with him. But all the female children that have not known man by lying with them, you can keep yourselves alive. So he instructs them, you don't allow these women. They will pay for their wicked sin of immorality. These gentlemanly soldiers were trying to be kind to the ladies, but Moses pointed out that those women were the very source of immorality and were guilty of doing great harm to Israel. They must die for their sin. He instructs the army to execute all women who were not virgins and allows them to keep the younger girls as captives and slaves. He also instructs them later on regarding the war booty which they acquired in the battle. They were allowed to keep some and also give a portion to the Levites. One powerful statement jumps out in this section. I want you to see it in verse 49. Now they're done with this whole war and they give a final accounting. In verse 49 it says, and they said unto Moses, thy servants have taken the sum of the men of war who are under our charge, and there lacketh not one man of us. They didn't lose one soldier in that battle. They destroyed a whole nation, and they didn't lose one soldier. That's an amazing thing. You can see that God is certainly helping and protecting these people. Chapter 32, we come to a Manasseh situation. I call it the Manasseh situation, but it's really dealing with the 2.5 tribes, but perhaps you'll understand why I call it the Manasseh situation as we work our way through it. There is a request in verses 1 through 5. Now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of cattle, and they saw, when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that behold, the place was a place for cattle. The children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spoke unto Moses and to Eleazar the priest and unto the princes of the congregation, saying, Ataroth and Dibon and Jazer and Nimrah and Heshbon and Eliah, Sebum and Nebo and Beon, even the country which the Lord smote before the congregation of Israel, is a land for cattle, and thy servants have cattle. Wherefore they said, if we have found grace in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for a possession, and bring us not over the Jordan. We see this wonderful land here. Let us settle here. Now, you saw that it was the first two tribes that came to them. It was Gad and Reuben. Those are two of the 12 tribes of Israel. We'll find out later on that Manasseh apparently got in on this as well. But there's a rebuke that is given here in verses 6 through 15. Moses rebukes them strongly. He sees this as a similar issue when the nation would not go into the promised land to begin with. The spies, the 12 spies, came and brought that report back, and they didn't go because they were afraid. And Moses sees this as a similar way. He says, what are you trying to do? You're going to bring God's anger down on us again. Wasn't 40 years enough to wander in the wilderness? You want to keep doing that? He rebukes them. He says, it won't happen. You need to go into the battle with us all. But their response is interesting in verse 16. And they came near unto him in verse 16 and said, we will build sheepfolds for our cattle and cities for our little ones, but we ourselves will go ready armed before the children of Israel until we have brought them into their place, and their little ones shall dwell in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return unto our houses until the children of Israel have inherited every man his inheritance. For we will not inherit with them on the other side of the Jordan or beyond, because our inheritance has fallen to us on this side of the Jordan eastward. So Moses gives them a reward in verse 20. And Moses said unto them, if you will do this thing, if you will go armed before the Lord to war, and will not go all of you armed over the Jordan before the Lord until he hath driven his enemies from him, and the land be subdued before the Lord, then afterward ye shall return and be guiltless before the Lord and before Israel, and this land shall be your possession before the Lord. But if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. Some of you have heard that verse many times, but you didn't know where it came from. Here it is. Be sure your sin will find you out. So Moses rewards them with a warning. You better follow through. There's a reaffirmation. They reaffirm verse 25 and through 27. Yep, we'll go. We will do this. We won't take any of our land. We will go and fight the battles. So then there's a ceremony that records their statement, their promise, and Moses promised to them that they could have that land. In verses 28 through 33, it's recorded. And then they begin to set up their residency in verses 34 through 42. They take possession and they begin to settle. It's a preparation so that when their families would be safe and be sustained when these men go to war. The men are going to go to war, their families are going to stay. And so it's an amazing picture. 2.5 tribes. Manasseh cuts their tribe in half. Only half of them says, we want to stay here. The other says, we want some possession in the land. So it is the Manasseh situation that I call it. Let's quickly move on now to chapter 33, where we have the marching summary. The marching summary of their 40 years journey wandering in the wilderness. And it goes through this chapter and it lists every place where they stopped and where they camped. There are over 40 of them. So they didn't stay in any one place terribly too long that we know of. And it's split up into three sections. The first is when they left Egypt, from Egypt and they came to Mount Sinai. Verses 1 through 15, from Egypt to Mount Sinai. In verses 16 through 39, it gives the list from Mount Sinai to Mount Hor. And then from 40 to 49, it gives from Mount Hor unto the plains of Moab. Have you heard that statement before yet tonight? The plains of Moab, that is by the Jordan River near what city? Jericho. That's where it brings them. So we've got this full list, the whole lineup here. And then he concludes the last section with memorandums for settling. And he deals with a number of issues. There's inheritance laws or rules and warnings. Command, you better drive out these tenants that are there. You are not to leave any of them in this land. This is your land, and they are to be driven out. It is my land. I'm giving it to you. The tenants that were there have been bad tenants. They're being evicted. Don't you let them stay. Kick them out. And there is some more discussion about that in the book of Deuteronomy. Their wickedness is horrible. And God says the land is spewing them out. The land will not allow them to stay. The evil that they do is wrong. I will not let that happen in my land. So there's inheritance laws. There's identity of limits or the borders. It gives the exact borders where it's to start and where it's to go. We know exactly what this land is. And one of the reasons why we look at those that want to spiritualize the promised land and the nation of Israel, it's amazing. What do you do with these exact borders in these towns, these cities that are listed there? This is the exact location. God says, this is your land, your terra firma. There's the identity of leaders in verses 16 through 29, the tribal leaders. There's an inheritance for Levites in chapter 35. The whole chapter deals with Levites. You are to spread them out and give them these different cities. And then he talks about cities of refuge also. Six cities of refuge. And these cities are to be places where you can go when people aren't uncertain, when an accident happens, or when somebody thinks that it's a crime and there needs to be some justice done there. Finally, he concludes with some special cases and more inheritance laws in chapter 36. Now, we could spend a lot of time on each of those, but I just want to summarize it in this way. As you should see, these are what I will call last minute instructions in preparation for entering the promised land. Here they are. They've come to this location just across the Jordan River. They are in the plains of Moab looking across at the land that God has promised. And they're looking at it. And God says, before you go in, here's some things that you need to be aware of. I don't just want you going in there and just anybody grabbing any land you want, anybody doing whatever they want. Here's the instructions. This is the way I want you to set up this whole society. I want leaders in charge. I want you to have specific locations. And I want there to be laws that you follow when you get into the land. The book closes with a view across the Jordan Valley and a strong anticipation of the soon call to invade. Look at the last verse of Numbers. These are the commandments and the ordinances which the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses unto the children of Israel, where? In the plains of Moab, by the Jordan, near Jericho. Have you heard that phrase before tonight? This is where they are, folks. They're getting ready to go in. It's the land that God has promised them. And they're all set. This was their land. The promised land. The land which God had been promising for centuries already. Now was the time. Now was the great moment when they would cross the Jordan River and take possession of this wonderful promised land. You say, now wait a minute. I think we got a whole nother book before we get to that invasion in the book of Joshua. You're right. The book of Numbers took us 38 years to get through. Well, it didn't get for us to get through. It took them 38 years for them to get through. The first census at the beginning and the last sentence at the end and some key instructions. And now they are all looking over there. And when we get to the next book of Deuteronomy, Moses gathers the whole nation together and he's going to give them his farewell address. And that's what the book of Deuteronomy is. It's a sermon. It's a long one, folks. That's why we're breaking it up into four sections. But he's going to preach a sermon and he's going to give them, it's his swan song. I'm out of here. You guys are going on without me. It's the land that God has promised you. They're all sitting there on the plains of Moab, looking at the Jordan River. Can we close with two applications tonight? Number one, we ought to be looking for the rapture. They were looking across the Jordan River to go into the promised land. Our promised land is not Israel. Our promised land is heaven. But we ought to be looking in the same way that they were. We ought to recognize that God has given us some rules for living in heaven. We ought to be getting ourselves prepared to go to heaven. We ought to be as excited and chomping at the bit to want to go as they were. We've been wandering through this wilderness for some of us 67 years now. Some of you have been in it for 90 years. Some of you maybe only for 20 or less. But how wonderful it would be to get there now. Even so, come Lord Jesus. We should all be looking for the rapture. The second thing is this. Be sure your sin will find you out. Some were saying, well, maybe we won't go in. No! Moses said, if you don't go in, if you don't go with us, that is sin. If you don't follow us and participate, your sin will find you out. Now, I don't know what your specific sin might be. We all struggle with sins and sometimes very private and nobody knows about them. But God does. And you can be sure of one thing. Be sure your sin will find you out. Just in case you're doubting that, let me give you a list of verses that will just document that again. Genesis 4:10. And he said, what hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. That was Cain killing Abel. And he didn't realize it, but the blood of his brother was crying out to God from the ground. His sin found him out. Genesis 44:16, and Judah said, what shall we say unto my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how shall we clear ourselves? God hath found out the iniquity of thy servants. Behold, we are my Lord's servants, both we and he also with whom the cup is found. We have been caught in our sin. And how about the story of Achan that we'll see here in a couple of weeks? Who went in with them and tried to hide his sin. Oh, he got found out, didn't he? 2 Samuel 12:12. God says through the Nathan prophet to David, for thou didst it secretly, that's his sin with Bathsheba, but I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun. Be sure, David, your sin will find you out. Job 34:21, Job says, for God's eyes are upon the ways of man, and he sees all his goings. Proverbs 5:21, for the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings. Ecclesiastes 12:14, For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Every secret thing. Isaiah 59, 12. For our transgressions are multiplied before us, and our sins testify against us, for our transgressions are with us, and as for our iniquities, we know them. Jeremiah 16, 17. For mine eyes are upon all their ways. They are not hid from my face, neither is their iniquity hid from mine eyes. That's God speaking. Nobody can hide from God. Jeremiah 32, 19. God is great in counsel and mighty in work, for your eyes are upon all the ways of the sons of men to give everyone according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. Matthew 12, 36. But I say unto thee, every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. Romans 2, 16, in the day when God shall judge the secrets of men by Jesus Christ according to my gospel. 1 Corinthians 4, 5, therefore judge nothing before the time until the Lord come, who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness and will make manifest the counsels of the hearts. And then shall every man have praise of God. And finally, Hebrews 4, 13. Neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and opened unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. Be sure your sin will find you out. Don't wait for God to deal with it and judge it. Take care of it in your own life. Confess your sin. If we confess our sins, the Bible says, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. I trust that you will confess your sin tonight, make sure that you're clean with God, and walk with him this week.